Hi, everybody. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. And I am a member of the Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I haven't found it necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink. I want to add that. You know, there was this guy in Texas who said, I haven't found it necessary to have a drink in 20 years. And his friend said, Frank, I saw you drunk last night. He said, yeah, but it wasn't necessary. But I haven't found it necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink since January 17th, 1981. So if I make another, 28 days? 21 days. 21 days, I'll have 30 years. And I'm grateful to God and to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous for that and through some fantastic sponsors and mentors I've had. And I'm glad they stuck around. And I want to share with you a little bit about my experience. I want to make sure I get my. I want to read you from the big book a little bit, because that's pure AA, and that's our basic text. That's the thing we all agree on, you know, and supposedly. And of course, all this is my opinion. You understand that, so there's no sense getting upset about anything I say. You know, no sense drinking over anything I say. I mean, if you want to use as an excuse something I said to drink, be my guest. As good as an excuse as any, but you know, you get mad at something I say, I'll probably change my mind on the way home. You know? I've been known to say shit, you know, I say stuff from this deal, and then I'm on my way home and say, why did I say that? You know, I don't want to take this stuff. It's just an AA meeting, you don't want to take it too seriously. We're not going to invade Iraq or anything, you know. Nobody's going to push the button because of this meeting, so I'm just going to give you a little bit. What I want to express is not only read some stuff from the book, which is pure AA, but I want to talk a little bit about my experiences, because it says our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, and I find that what we bring to the table is our particular stories, which is basically how the program sort of like materializes in our life, how it manifests itself in our life. And, you know, everybody in here, you know, we all know. First of all, let's start from the understanding. I want you to know that I understand that everybody in here is brilliant, and you're all smarter than me. And that I shouldn't really be here. We all know, for you guys in the back and everything, all you guys that are saying, why is this guy talking? They should be listening to me. I know that. You know what I mean? And I just happen to be the guy up here, and I'm sorry for that. I'm sure you're going to get your chance in 20 or 30 years to get up here, you know, and pontificate. So let's start off with the understanding that I know you're right and I'm wrong. And, you know, you should be here and I shouldn't be here, you know, and I apologize for that. And I'll tell you this. I'm going to just try the best of my ability. Everybody, we all walk in here thinking, and one of the things I'm going to talk about is I'm not really good on humility. I don't know anything about humility, so I can't talk about it. I've never been able to do it. I wouldn't know. I think I'll be humble tomorrow. I don't know how to do that deal. I have been humiliated. I'm an A student on humiliation, and I know how to be humbled. I've been humbled. In this deal, but I don't know anything. But I know a lot about arrogance. I know a lot about arrogance. You know, apparently, that's a chief characteristic of alcoholics: defiance. And so I want to talk a little bit about defiance and arrogance and things like that, and because that's an important thing when we talk about the second step. And the other thing I want to tell you is when I do the steps, you know, different people do it different ways, and I've been doing it for up now 30 years. And when I first started doing the steps, I did it sort of methodically, in order. Very formalistic, and there's nothing wrong with this. There's nothing wrong with people that do this. I would go to step meetings to learn how to do the steps and all that sort of stuff. So I want you to know that I'm not like that way at all. I mean, if I actually speak about the step at a meeting, you're like lucky. I mean, we say this is number two to keep count. You know, I mean, this is like Pulp Fiction. Everybody ever see the movie Pulp Fiction? Sort of starts at the end and goes to the beginning and the middle, and you got to try to figure out. In other words, you fall asleep for 30 seconds of this deal, you're going to be lost, because I'm going to take some hard right turns and things. You're going to have to do some work to keep up with this deal. And one of the things you have to do when you come in here is you got to lower your expectations. Because, you know, alcoholics put high expectations on this. You know, you come in here saying, well, Russell's going to talk about this. And then I don't talk about that, and you're all upset because I didn't talk about that. And what happens is because you're a typical alcoholic and you want to think about how upset you are that I'm not talking about what you think I should talk about, because this is what you need, you miss whatever I was talking about. And which may or may not be something. You know, I went to a meeting once and some guy got on the podium. Because that's the nature, you know, it says in the 12 and 12, it says, unless and until an alcoholic accepts his devastating weakness, whatever that is. See, you may think it's drinking. You may think your devastating weakness is drinking, but I've been to thousands of AA meetings, nobody's drinking. So if you're not drinking, that's your devastating weakness. Have a nice day. See you around. You don't have a problem. But you see, the devastating weakness I have has nothing to do with drinking. I haven't had a drink in 30 years. I got some other devastating weaknesses and some other old ideas that will lead me to drinking that I don't even know about. I mean, it took me like 31 years to figure out that I had a drinking problem and it made my life unmanageable and I needed to stop drinking. And that was just the symptom of the disease. And the only way I figured that out is by being crushed. Not because I was smart or anything, because when I was the smartest guy, I was the drunkest guy. And I was saying, get it, you know, who the hell do you think you are? You don't understand. How many years do you think it takes in Alcoholics Anonymous? How many crushings do you think it, you know, it says the way we get a new perspective, the way we get a new attitude on everything, the way we see things in the 12 of 12, it says through 100 forms of crushing and the 100 forms of humiliation and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. So there may be some crushing. If you're anything like me, you may have some more crushing to go through, some more things to go through in your life to figure out that you got something wrong, more wrong with you than just sipping on bourbon or scotch or something like that. And one of the things I say about experience and the reason why it's so important, you know, my sponsor used to say one of the things I talk about is when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will walk away with an experience. You know, I mean, we all come in here, we're all smart, and we all have our opinions. You know, I used to be on the phone. For 8 years, I was in relay in Dade County. If you called up after 11 p.m. at night till 8 o'clock in the morning in Alcoholics Anonymous for 8 years, and you were drunk, and you wanted to learn about Alcoholics Anonymous, you just wanted to talk to somebody, you'd get me. Which is probably why nobody got sober for 8 years, you know, but you'd get me. So you don't know how many drunks whose lives were in ruination, who had nothing to better do in their life because they had nothing going to them, at 3 o'clock in the morning called me up on the phone because their life was a total disaster. And once they got me on the phone and I was sober, they wouldn't let me talk and they would say things like, you got to listen to me. So let's start off with the understanding that the nature of the alcoholic, part of the nature of the devastating nature of the disease is you don't, I start off with the understanding that, and I know, you may be an exception to this, and it's not necessarily 100% true. You don't have to get, but I start off with the understanding that there's a large percentage of the audience in any Alcoholics Anonymous meeting that really doesn't want to listen to anything I have to say. Has all sorts of tapes running like, this guy's full of shit. I mean, you already start off with the cynicism. You know, we're not skeptics. Skeptics say, well, I don't know, but I'll listen. Cynics say, this guy's full of shit, without even listening to him. I don't know what he's going to say, but I ain't interested, you know? It don't matter, my life is down the tubes, and I'm feeling crappy. I'm just not interested, because I can look at this guy and I already don't like him. Because that's the way we are. That's part of the nature of alcoholism. Recognizing assholes. You know, I used to recognize them. I'd be driving in a car, and I'd be driving in my little Camaro, and some guy would pass me in a Corvette with a blonde. I'd say, man, there goes another asshole. You know, you can spot them. They're out there. I mean, it's so clear. Isn't it clear to you? I used to do it in bars. Across the bar, I could spot assholes, you know? You know, I could just tell, you know? And, you know, that kind of thing. We just get in judgments about people and stuff like that. And so I don't know whether I'm going to necessarily talk about the step you're interested in. If we got 100 people in this room or more, there's going to be 100 different talks going on out there. I once, because, you know, I'd like to think it has something to do with what I say. You know, it's not so much of what I say, it's what you hear. It's what you're ready to accept. You know, and you may walk out of here if it's like most AA meetings, there are some people that are going to walk out of here with nothing until 2 or 3 years from now. When all of a sudden their life is going to get to a point where it's all crushed and disabled, and all of a sudden they're going to get something out of this talk, out of something I said, they'll remember or hear something, and they'll get something, and something will happen, they'll click in, and they'll say, here's the answer, and they don't even remember that they got it from this meeting. And there are some people that are going to hear an hour talk here, and what's going to happen is they're going to get one thing out of it. But that's okay, because that's the one thing they're supposed to get out of it. And it may not even be this thing I say. You know, there's no controlling this deal because there's somebody else in charge. I remember I went down, and you only learn this with experience. You experience this thing. It's not based upon your intellect. It's not based upon your opinion. We're all alcoholics. We're all arrogant. You know, I'm arrogant. I think I know it all. I think I'm smarter than you. You know, how could you possibly understand me? You don't know me. You don't know all the nuances in my life. You don't know what's going on with me. I know you think I have a drinking problem. I don't have a drinking problem. I drink because I have problems. My drinking perfectly matches my problem. And one day I won't have a problem. I won't have a money problem. I won't have a wife problem. I won't have this problem. And I won't have to drink so much. So thank you very much for your advice. But why don't you go screw yourself? You know, and I'm just going to kill you with the pieces you don't have. I mean, how can you talk to me about me? You don't know about me. You don't know about my life. You don't know about my parents' divorce or how I was affected when I was a kid. You don't know anything about my deal. And so I just kill you with the fact that I am so unique. And I know I'm so unique and I'm so different, which of course means I can't talk to anybody because nobody will really understand, which basically puts me in a position where I'm totally alone and isolated from everybody, because how can I have friends or even understand? Because nobody can really understand me. So I walk around thinking that nobody will ever understand me. And wonder why I'm always feeling so lonely, no matter what, even if I'm in a bar with 300 people. And not even realizing it has all to do with me and what's going on inside of me, and that the true nature of alcoholism is a disease that centers in my mind, not my body, and has nothing to do with the drinking. The drinking is just something I use in order to cure the disease. The disease is what I have when I'm sober. Men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They are naturally in a sober state. Restless, irritable, and discontented, unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. And so the disease is named after the best thing we have to cure the disease. And the only thing I ever experienced when I was drinking, I never even experienced alcoholism that I could actually experience. I experienced something called drunk. Drunk is different than alcoholism. Drunk is drunk. People who are non-alcoholic get drunk. I said this last week. If you take a non-alcoholic and an alcoholic and you have them both drink a bottle of scotch, they're both going to get drunk. They'll both look drunk. You won't know which one's the alcoholic and which one's not the alcoholic. The way you tell what an alcoholic is you got to look at them sober and see how they act. Because I never experienced alcoholism. Because when I would start experiencing alcoholism when I was sober, it would be like this. I would be bored, I would be restless, I would be something, it wouldn't matter, I would be breathing. You know, some people say, well, I drank because of this, I drank because I was awake. Awake was good enough for me. That was my excuse. You know, if you were awake and felt like me, you'd drink too. You know, and if alcohol did for you what it did for me, you'd drink just the way I did. I defy you to stop drinking alcohol and have it do for you what it did for me and stop. You just ain't going to do it. And the bottom line is I don't drink anymore because alcohol stopped working for me. And the sad part for me is the same thing that's sad for you. Alcohol really stopped working for me about 10 years before I realized it stopped working for me. And you end up hurting a lot of people and you end up hurting yourself. And so what happens is I'd be walking around and feeling whatever I feel, and all of a sudden alcoholism would raise its ugly head, and of course I didn't know it was alcoholism, it was just a feeling, it was just an irritation, it was just an itch, it was just a feeling of disease, it was a something, and I would say, I need a drink. And I'd whack that stuff down and chase that deal away. I'd whack it down and chase it away. I didn't even know what I was chasing away, but I was just chasing it away. Because I had to drink. I could not drink. I could not live and drink. I'll tell you, when you experience alcoholism, when you're 18 months sober and the world, and it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you can't get to sleep, and you're worrying about a million different things with 1,000 different voices all about you, and you know it has nothing to do with drinking because you don't have a drinking problem because you're not drinking, and you don't know what it is. And now you know why you drank, because it's something called alcoholism, and that's what you have to deal with. And that's what we're here, and that's what this deal is all about. And the difference between being an alcoholic and just having a drinking problem is if you're an alcoholic, the disease continues even after you stop drinking. Which means you have to deal with the disease, place it in remission, grow through that sucker, and ask and get help the way it's outlined in this book, even after you stop drinking. I'm down in Homestead I've been doing these step series for about 27 years, so I'm down around 25 years ago. I'm doing a series down in Homestead. And I don't know. I mean, I've learned a lot. You know, you just learn a lot by living. That's how you learn about these steps, by living. You can read them. You can get them intellectually. But there's nothing like going through the ringer. And so you learn by living. Everything that happens to you in your life that makes you feel uncomfortable or diseased or in a state of irritability teaches you about these steps. Because you run around like a chicken with your head chopped off trying to figure out what's going on. You talk to people, you talk to your sponsor, you pray, you read the book, you do all sorts of crazy things, you just don't drink. And somehow at the end of that, you learn something about yourself. It may take you 5 years to learn one thing about yourself, but you learn something about yourself. And you read something in the book and all of a sudden it made sense. Something that maybe never made sense before. And I'm down at a meeting in Homestead and I never, you know, there's these little phrases, these little lines, there's words that have such meaning. There's a word in the 12th step. You know the word? The word is try. It says we tried to carry the message. I never saw that word. We read it all the time. I know you see the word. I never saw the word. It says, we try to carry the message. I know it says we try to carry the message. You know what I thought it said? I thought it said we carry the message. That's what I thought it said. I thought it said we carry the message. That's what I thought. You know, when your responsibility is to carry the message, I didn't even realize this. That's a hell of a responsibility. You know what that means? That means if after this meeting somebody drinks, it's my fault. Because I didn't carry the message. That means if you don't like me, I did something wrong. It's my fault because I didn't carry the message. That puts a tremendous burden on me. That means I guess I have some sort of power over you. I have a power over whether you drink or whether you don't drink or if something goes bad or if you don't like me. That's like a me thing. I got to worry about how I talk and all that sort of stuff and what I'm going to say. About 25 years ago, I was doing a step meeting at the Homestead Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was doing, I think, step 4. And it was grouped sort of like this, and I was talking, and I was doing whatever I do out there, and I just felt, you know, alcoholics, by the way, are sensitive. Did you know that? I told my sponsor, I said, I'm sensitive. He says, no, you're not sensitive. He says, great artists are sensitive, Russell. You're just touchy. I have a daughter who's not speaking to me. She's put me on the list. She hasn't spoken to me for 2 weeks. She probably won't speak to me for a long while until she needs me for something, and then she'll figure out how to forgive me. But in any event, we're like that, you know what I mean? And she's not even an alcoholic. She's just, you know, apparently I think it's actually possible to have this disease and not be a drinker. You may run into people like that one day. You say, man, this guy's an alcoholic, but he doesn't drink, you know what I mean? This guy is as alcoholic as I am, but he doesn't drink, you know? And, you know, and what happened was I said something. I rebuked her. You know what a rebuke is? I criticized her about something, and I hurt her feelings, and that was it. I'm on the list. I'm right up there on the list, man. Die and eat dirt. I know that list. I know how that is. You know. So I'm in Homestead, Florida, and. And I'm doing this 4-step, and I just had a feeling that they didn't like me. You know, they weren't like laughing at my jokes or stuff like that. I wasn't getting across. I didn't have that feeling of love, you know. And one of the things I have to understand that's the devastating, you know, system, and that's an alcoholic understands and accepts is devastating weaknesses and all its consequences. We have weaknesses, we have old ideas, and there are consequences of these old ideas. And most of these old ideas, like for instance, one of the alcoholic weaknesses that I found in myself, and you know what I found about this disease? And I'm just giving you my opinion based upon my experience. I found that if I got it, you got it. You know all this crap about I'm unique and I'm different and you're not like me? You know, I found if I thought it, you thought it. If I feel it, you feel it. If I'm this way, you're this way. Like where, I actually believe this, that, I mean, I know we have people in here who are psychotic and have all sorts of overlaying craziness and bipolar and all that. I'm tripolar, actually. Yeah, happy, joyous, and free. I just fluctuate from those, you know, around those. But you know, what I find is that truthfully, what alcoholics are is we are absolute twins. I know our DNA may be, but we are just absolutely clones. People say there's no such thing as alcoholic personality. I don't believe that. We are like clones of each other, which accounts for why I can speak to 1,000 people or 2,000 people or 3,000 people and say something and everybody laughs and everybody understands and I don't have to explain myself. And everybody nods their head. You know, nobody says, what is he talking about? I go to the Kiwanis clubs, they're saying, what is this guy talking about, you know? I go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting and I say the craziest thing. They're all saying, yeah, I know what this guy, I know what, you know. Don't tell me we're not twins, you know? I mean, it's absolutely true. So I know that if I've got it, you've got it, even though you don't know you have it. And I can figure out I have something, and you know what I know? I know if I have it, I know you have it. And I know you also have what I had, and that is a reluctance to admit that I know anything about you, and the denial that you have it before you realize you have it. So I know, even though I have it, and even though I know you have it, if I tell you have it, you say, go to hell, you don't know shit. But all that tells me is that you really have it. But you just don't know you have it yet. So I say, have a nice life. You know, have fun with it. So one of the devastating weaknesses alcoholics have is they got to be loved. They're affectionate-aholics. They are belongaholics. They are don't reject me-aholics, which is why we have problems with relationships, quote, romantic relationships, which is a whole other thing I'm not going to do. I can go 3 hours on that deal. That's why we have problems with romantic relationships, because we have problems with rejection. We're very sensitive. And for an alcoholic, rejection could be just saying, not saying hello as you're passing the hall. You know, what did he mean by that? You know, what did I do? You know, I mean, it's a, we got to be loved. We got to be understood. We got to be, you know, we need attention. You know, and we're very, you know, that kind of deal. You know, it may take years in Alcoholics Anonymous before you listen. I've been married for many years, and the reason I've been married for 30 years, and the reason I can stay married for 30 years is because I ignore about 99% of the stuff that's actually going on around me. I just ignore it. Alcoholics can't ignore stuff. They just cannot. I'm not going to say it. And the next thing you know, there's a thermonuclear blast. We don't ignore anything. We put everything on the list. We got everything. Everything has to be punished. Revenge has to be sought in everything. I always have to have the last word. You know what I mean? We cannot ignore. And that's also because one of the alcoholic deals is we have very low opinions of ourselves. In the middle of saying we're great. I'm the greatest, but I'm really a piece of shit. You know, it's some sort of real weird sort of thing that's set up there. You know, when you think you're great, but on the other hand you think you're a piece of shit, that sets up some sort of anxiety. I don't know what that deal is. Scotch helps that. Sort of brings it all together, you know, and I don't know. So that's the kind of personalities I deal with all the time. So I'm sitting there, and I'm one of these guys, and I'm up here, and I'm got 5 years or whatever it is I'm doing, mean and homestead, and I said, and you know, I know they're not even listening to me, and it's a terrible thing, and I'm not carrying the message, and it's horrible, and the meeting ends, and I leave, and you know, I'm saying to myself stuff like, I'm not going to go back there, they don't like me, I made a fool out of whatever the heck it is, it's all about me. It's all about me. You know, it's me, 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 me. I mean, the truth is, nobody's thinking about me. They're all thinking about them. I don't think they're thinking about them because I got that alcoholic paranoia. They're all thinking about me. They're thinking about me now. They're talking about me now. You're laughing. You don't know what it's like. But the bottom line is, I'm thinking about me, and I'm leaving there, but of course I'm coming back because as sick as I am and as crazy I am, you can be sick and you can be crazy. I had a guy once called me up, my sponsor. He says, I don't know whether I'm an alcoholic. I think I'm just crazy. I said, you can be both. He says, really? He says, absolutely. So, you know, you can be crazy and you can be sick, but, you know, as long as you don't drink and you come back, you have a shot. You have a shot. And I was scared, and more as crazy as I was and as sick as I was, I did not want to drink. And I knew I had to go back because I had made the commitment. So I had at least that much integrity. And I went back there the next week, knowing that the group hated me. Knowing that they didn't like me. Know that they were talking about me all week, that terrible guy, you know, and he was terrible and everything like that. Knowing that I didn't say anything that was worthwhile to anybody. You know, I'm not self-conscious, and I get up there ready to do the fifth step, and a guy comes up to me, and he says, can I talk to you? I said, sure. I said, you know, I was here last week. I said, yeah, and he says, I just want to tell you what you said saved my life. Saved my life? Saved my life. I said, really? I said, you know, what did I say? And he says, you know, I was gonna kill myself. I was gonna drink. I was gonna leave the program. And out of desperation, I said, I'd go to this. You know, I heard this new guy was speaking. I figured I'd go to this one meeting. Maybe you had something to say. Maybe I would hear something. So I went to this meeting. You didn't even know me. I was sitting in the back, and I was listening. And he says, and it wasn't making any sense to me. And I was depressed. And you know, and my wife left. My girlfriend, whatever the heck it was. And he says, but when you said. The chicken was on the roof. Everything came together for me. All of a sudden, the whole thing made sense. And I understood exactly what was going on, and my whole attitude changed. And I'm listening to him, and I had never said chicken was on the roof. No, don't get me wrong. I was speaking some poultry there. I mean, I know what he was referring to. You know, it's like one of these things like he got it, but it wasn't real. I said something like the turkey was in the basement or something, you know? It wasn't a chicken on the roof. He had gotten it wrong. And then I realized But of course, I took credit for it. I said, "Oh yeah, chicken on the roof." I always say that. My key thing, you know, the credit. You know, but the bottom line is, but you know what I realized? Here's what I realized. I realized that I was up there, and I was probably doing the worst fourth step meeting I had ever done in my life. But it was the best meeting I could do that night. You know, I was just trying. I had just come there, I had shown up, and I was trying to do the best job I could. And I say, chicken on the roof, or turkey in the basement, and it goes floating across the room, turkey in the basement, and there's some guy sitting back there in the back of the room who's going to kill himself, he's going to die, he's whatever, and the only reason he came in to this room is because of the modicum of faith, if you could even call it faith or hope, that maybe he might hear something, longing to hear something that somebody might say that would make sense to him as to why he shouldn't drink. And he's sitting in the room with that attitude, looking for that thing, that deal that's going to save his ass, you know what I mean? And turkey on in the basement goes floating across the room, and it goes into his ears, turkey in the basement, and God does what God does best. And knows exactly what piece is missing. He turns turkey in the basement to chicken on the roof. This guy hears what he needs to hear, and I get credit for it. And what happened to me is, as a result of that meeting, maybe a week or a month down the road, as I percolated through my mind, I started realizing that it wasn't about carrying the message. It was all about trying to carry the message. And that I'm not responsible whether you get it or you don't get it, or what you hear or what you don't hear, whatever happens, that I'm up here, I'm trying to carry the message, I'm trying to do a second step meeting, which maybe it won't be a second step. Maybe it'll be the worst second step meeting in the entire universe, okay? But as long as I'm up here and I'm trying to share my experience, faith, and hope and do the best I can, whatever message is going to go out is going to go out. Whatever you're going to hear, you're going to hear. There's going to be 100 different people. Nobody might hear anything. It might be one guy who hears one thing 20 years from now, and he stays sober and he'll say, "I'll never forget that meeting you did at Little River. You don't remember me, but I got 30 years now, and I sponsored 200 people. And when you said chicken on the roof, you know, and I said, no, I said turkey on the basement. I just do what I do, and God's in control, and it's not about me." Which means I don't have to be scared about whether this works or not, or what the results are, or whether you stay sober, or even whether you like me. And God knows alcoholics spend 90% of their time worrying about whether other people like them and how they feel. What did I say? Why did I say that? I wonder what they think about what I said. You know, all that sort of crap. That accounts for about 5,000 of the voices. You know what I mean? And we always come up short comparing our insides with other people's outsides. And so the bottom line is I understand that, you know, this deal, you know, there are going to be some people that are going to walk out of this room and they're going to, whatever the second step meeting is, and it's going to be a 10th step for them, or it's going to be a third step for them, or it's going to be a first step for them, or a fifth step, or whatever it is. It's going to be whatever it's going to be. So don't be disappointed if it doesn't fit into. I remember one time I went to a meeting and some guy stood up and, you know, I was a big book guy. So I was told early on, he says, "We are not cured. We are not cured." You ever hear that? We are not cured. It's true. We are not cured. All we have is a daily reprieve. Some guy in a meeting stood up. He had a lot of time. He was in the South Dade room. He said, "My name's Joe, and I'm a recovered alcoholic." I had heard recovering. I'm a recovering alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic in recovery. So I had never heard anybody say they were a recovered alcoholic. First time I'd ever heard that. I know what that meant. That meant cured. This guy said he's recovered. I immediately knew he was full of shit. I couldn't believe he said, I couldn't believe they were letting him get away with that. There were new people in the room. I had 6 months, but there were guys who, I knew he was full of shit, but there were guys with 3 weeks in the room that were going to drink because of this son of a bitch. And nobody would say anything. And I couldn't, you know, when you hear somebody from the podium talking bullshit and people are going to die, you know what I mean? You can't help but worry about it and think about it the whole meeting. And so the meeting came out. I didn't hear a word he said, you know, because the guy was full of crap. And I went up to my sponsor and said, "What do you think of the guy?" He says, "The guy was full of shit. He's killing people in there. He's telling them he's cured." I said, "What did he say?" He said his name was Joe and he was a recovered alcoholic. And he said he was recovered. He says, "Well, you are." He says, "What do you mean I am?" He says, "You are recovered. Russell, you're recovered." "What do you mean I'm recovered?" He says, "Why don't you read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous? Why don't you read the big book? We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body."
That's right.
holy shit, I wonder what his talk was about. Son of a bitch might have said something, you know? Whoa! Imagine how good I'd be tonight if I had actually heard any of that stuff, you know? Would have probably set me back 6 years, you know? Just because I got pissed off and I got a resentment because the guy used the word. You think that's unusual? I'm an alcoholic. I'm defiant. I'm crazy. I'm nuts. That can happen to me. I can hear a word. I can look at an inflection or something like that. Something can turn me off and I miss the whole deal. Because I'm the guy who says, do you know who you're talking to? You have no idea who you're talking about. You're full of crap. You don't know me. I'm the arguer. My chief characteristic, the book says, is defiance. Defiance. I'm going to defy. Go left, I'm going right. Stop here, I go. You know, I'm going to do the exact opposite. Because that's just the way I am, and you're full of shit. You know, and I'm smarter than you, and I'm brighter than you, and if you disagree, you have to be killed because you're stupid. And that's how I am sober. That's my. That's part of the tendency. That's why I got to write. Unless an alcoholic admits and accepts his devastating weaknesses and all their consequences, sobriety will be precarious. Of true happiness, he'll know none at all. I don't want some precarious sobriety. I want to find true happiness. I want to have that deal that they had. It says we've experienced much of heaven. We've been rocking in the fourth dimension of existence of which you had not even dreamed. And so I come in here, and all of a sudden I start hearing about God and all this other stuff and all this mumbo jumbo stuff, and I'm hair triggered. You're full of shit. I don't want to hear this crap. I don't want to hear any of this crap. I don't want to hear. I want to figure out a way. I am hair triggered to figure out a way how I can do this without God. There are guys in here that have 25 years, 30 years, 15 years, 10 years, and they're sober. And they're still trying to figure out how to do it without God. They're still trying to figure out how to do it with a higher power and not have to call it God. They're still trying. I mean, trust me, they're here. They're here. You can tell who they are. They're pissed off at me now. You see, if they knew how good it makes me feel to get them upset, they would love me just to not give me the pleasure of pissing people off. Because I know once I get you angry, you're mine. Because I am an alcoholic. I know what happens when you get angry at somebody because of something they said. You can't forget it. You can't get them out. They live rent-free in your head for weeks and months. You either drink out over it or you get worse and worse over it until one day you either drink or explode or do the steps or something like that. And then all of a sudden, you figure that thing out, you forget the deal, and all of a sudden you grow, and all of a sudden you think something different, and you say, man, that son of a bitch is right, or I understand what he's saying now. And then 5 years later, you go up to the guy and you say, I used to hate you, but now I love you. I know how that works, because when you're around for 30 years, you see the pattern. You're around long enough to see the thing all flesh out. You see it come around. You see the 50, 100 guys that say, I hated you, you said this, but now I love you, will you sponsor? You see that whole thing go on. And you're patient enough to let it wait and let it happen. Because if you're in here and you're a sick and suffering alcoholic, you've hurt people, you've hurt yourself, you're not doing well inside, things aren't working for you, and you're looking for relief, you are going to have to expect to hear somebody tell you something that you're not going to like and isn't going to make any sense to you. Because if you liked it and it made sense to you, then you would have done it a long time ago, because none of you are stupid, you're bright. And so the only stuff you're not going to do is the stuff you don't want to do because it doesn't make sense to you and it's opposite of what you want to do. And if somebody tells you this is what you have to do and you don't want to do it, the first reaction you're going to say is go screw yourself. And hate the person that's giving you that message. And so it's understandable why you can read through this book and try to look for loopholes and skip over shit. Just like I told you last week when my first wife said to me, come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. You come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. You come home drunk. One more time, I'm leaving you. You can't get clearer than that. I was sober when I heard it. I wasn't drunk. I was a pretty bright guy. Got in my car, drove 3 blocks to the red light. Red light's there. I'm just thinking, what the hell do you mean by that? Well, one of the devastating weaknesses of alcoholics is an inability to hear people say things that they don't understand or they don't like. If you're an alcoholic and somebody tells you something you don't like, or you hear something you don't like, or something you don't want to accept or something like that, you kill it. You may kill it by saying, I don't understand what they're talking about. You may be able to look somebody in the eye, and the clearest statement in the world, you could look them in the eye and pass a polygraph test and say, I didn't understand what they were saying. It just didn't compute. Or another way you can kill that is just hate the person. You can just hate them. Just hate them. That's all. Somebody says something you don't like, just say, I hate that son of a bitch. Just hate them. Because if you hate somebody, you can make them go away. You go, they're stupid or stuff like that. Just laugh at them, humiliate them, say they're stupid or something like that. And then make sure you find somebody else who can agree with you. You know, that guy was an idiot. Yeah, he was an idiot. Well, there, I feel good. I don't have to do it. Because I found some other sick son of a bitch in here that agrees with me. So in any event, listen, this is me being gentle. You gotta hang around, you don't know. We'll do a little pruning here. So here's the deal. It says, we got enough time left where I might actually get into the second step. So here we go. Further on, clear gut directions are given showing how we recover. These are followed by 43 personal experiences. Each individual, in the personal stories, describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. This is the big book. In a big book talk, this is what it says. This isn't me. It says each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. Now, does it say the way he drank? Does he say he talks about his problems? Does it say he talks about, gives a report about all the crap that's happened to him and what people are doing to him? Does it say he tells about all his feelings and his emotions? It doesn't say that, does it?
No.
It says each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. He talks on AA stories about how you establish a relationship with God. If I want to hear alcoholic drunkalogs, I'll go to a bar. You know something? Many people think Alcoholics Anonymous is just another bar that they could talk about the same shit they talked about in the bar that they were talking to their barroom buddies, but they just drink coffee. Now, that is not to say there isn't value in drunkalogs or any of that for an identification purpose. I mean, for an identification purpose, there's value in that. There's value in all that, okay? That's not saying that we don't talk about our problems or our difficulties. We're problem people in order to explain certain things or illustrate certain things or if anything, just to show our experience. But at the tail end of this, this is a program about solutions. There is a solution, and the solution in our program has to do with faith in God. That's why we have chapter to the agnostics, which is all about the second step. It says, if a mere philosophy, a better philosophy of life would have helped us, we'd be sober long ago. This isn't my quote. This is out of the book. But it did not help us because lack of power was our dilemma. We had to find a power. And that means we wrote a book and we had to talk about God. And then they talk about what happens to us. We get pissed off. We get pissed off about that deal. We're pissed. You know, I think God's sort of important in this deal. Here's the how and why. But first of all, we had to quit playing God. We read the A, B's, and C's. What are the A, B's, and C's? A, that we're out. Here's the things that we're supposed to. It says, there is one who has all power. That one is Russell. That one is you. Does it say there is one who has 10% of the power? 90%? There is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. I think they were serious. I think they were serious. They put it right in there. We read it in every meeting. It says, there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. They say that right there. And then some sucker in an aiming will say, well, I don't like all this talk about God. Well, go to another group. Join another fellowship. Get involved in something else. I mean, read the material. I'm sorry. You know, we're going by the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that's kept people sober for 100, you know, for 70 years now. You know, we'd rather trust the big book as opposed to your opinion. You know, we don't want what you have. Not everybody wants what you have. You're just pissed off. You just sit around pissed off at people that talk about God. Maybe we don't just want to sit around day meetings being pissed off about people that talk about God. Maybe we want to feel good about ourselves. Maybe we want to lose that fear. That we're alcoholics, and what does it say? It says we could not manage our own lives. Does it say we could manage our own lives? Does it say that as long as we don't drink, we can manage our lives? Does it say as long as we don't, are we like Roland Hazard? Now knowing the inner workings of my mind, having seen the best psychiatrist in the world, Roland, Dr. Carl Jung. You know, what did he say? He says, Drinking was impossible. Now knowing the inner workings of my, nevertheless, he was drunk in 3 weeks. Hit Paris, and that was it. You know what he said there? You know what Dr. Young said to him? He said, you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I've never seen anybody get sober, never been able to treat him. He says, you know what he said? You got to find God. You got to find him. It says, you're an alcoholic. Here's the three things. It says, being convinced of these, you're now at step three, which means you pass through step two. Being convinced, number one, you cannot manage your own lives. Do you believe that? It says you got to be convinced of that. Do you believe that? How many people believe that you cannot manage your own life? Okay, now listen to me. You know, I love you, but I need to tell you something. You are full of shit. And I'm doing this because I love you. Because if you don't understand how full of shit you are, you will never understand how serious this disease is. How can you say you don't believe? Listen, to know and not to do is not to know. How can you say you don't believe that you cannot manage your own lives when you're going to walk right out of here and spend the next 24 hours until the next meeting trying to manage your life? How is it that most of your thought process is about how do I do this and how do I say this and who do I talk to and what do I do and where do I go and what if I say this and what if I say this is this entire hand-to-hand combat with the planet Earth? You ever hear, I fought the law and the law won, I fought the world and the world won. How is it that you're going to go out there, and many of you are going to struggle a lot more than other people with life and what's happening in life and what life is throwing at you, trying to manage it mostly by yourself without a sponsor, but even with a sponsor, still trying to manage your life so that you won't get hurt, or you'll get the money, or you'll get the girlfriend, or you'll get the boyfriend, knowing somehow if you can play the game properly and do it the right way without God's help or something like that, just trying to figure this whole mess out like Roland Young, you'll be okay, and you'll feel okay, and everything will be wonderful. When you spend most of your waking hours trying to figure out how to manage your life and manipulate your way through life, you know, and make the right turns and the right moves and everything like that, consciously and subconsciously, how you can say you believe that? Now, you may believe that to a certain extent, but the truth of the matter is most of you guys are still trying to do it. You know why you're trying to do that? Because you're addicted to that, like you're addicted to scotch. Because you're just as addicted to that thinking because this disease centers in the mind, not the body. So you're doing the shit that's making you feel toxically bad and set up your alcoholism without even knowing you're doing it because that's what you do naturally. It's almost like drinking for you. It's thinking. And you can't stop thinking the way you have because you've never been able to think differently than the way you have because you've always thought exactly the way you're thinking because it's the most comfortable way for you to think. It's uncomfortable for you to think otherwise. And if I tell you to think otherwise, you say you're full of shit. Because you want to think the way you want to think.
Exactly.
Okay, no human power could have relieved their alcoholism. How many people believe that? You are so pathetic. You don't want to put up your hands either.
I believe that. I
should have done that one first.
Yeah.
Should have done that one first. They would have put up their hands, right? Now, like two people, you know? You run around trying to find that gal, that guy, that gal, that boss, that thing that'll work out the way you want to work out so that you'll be okay and forget that guy. You're just convinced there's some human being, some daddy, some mommy, some sugar daddy, some something out there that's going to fix that's going to make you okay, that's going to make your life okay. If I lose him, if I lose her, if I don't get this, if I don't get that, this some person, place, thing, job or something that's going to make you okay. That's going to solve your problem. Some gal said to me, I was all upset and screwed up about something. She said to me, well, Russ, let me ask you. Would money solve this problem?
No.
No.
Of course. $1 million would solve. Of course it would solve this. He says, well, if money is the problem, then you don't have much of a problem. I said, what are you talking about? I told you what Ray O'Keefe once told me. I said, when do I get financially secure? He says, never.
Never.
I said, never? What are you talking about? He says, never. He says, the book says financial insecurity will leave me. He says, nah, it never leaves you. He says, the book says. He says, the book doesn't say that. He says, the book says financially, he says you're going to lose financial insecurity. He says, it doesn't say that, Russell. It says you're going to lose the fear of financial insecurity. He says, you'll be broke your entire life, but it won't bother you. Well, thanks. Something to look forward to, right? But, you know.
Don't stay broke.
But, hey, listen. You know, guys come up to me and say, I feel this, I feel that. I feel horrible. I feel tired. I feel depressed. I say to them, I say, well, let me ask you something. If you didn't feel that way, how would you feel? So what do you mean? So what do you mean? What do I mean? If you weren't, if you didn't feel depressed because your girl left you, how would you feel? I said, what do you mean? I said, if you didn't feel depressed because she left, if you didn't feel bad, how would you feel? This is, what kind of stupid question is that? If I didn't feel bad, I wouldn't feel bad. I said, there you go. That's nothing to do with her. Has to do with you. Has to do with your feelings. Has to do with your emotions. Has to do with your upsetability. No human power can relieve their alcoholism. You know what it says after that? It says, and those are two things that you guys don't even believe in. Or you say you believe in. You have guilt lips and then you go out and just live the opposite way. It says God couldn't would if he was sought. He said God couldn't would if he was sought, which is, by the way, at the end of the promises, it says God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. God can remove all these things. He can give you the promises. On an everyday, hour-to-hour, minute-to-minute basis, he can do that deal. If he was sought, and if you believe that, and if you have more faith, and more faith in that, that can happen to you, and your life can be transformed, and you can talk faster. You can. You can. There's nothing to it, because you don't worry. The reason you can do this stuff and talk faster, I used to marvel at guys, is because you're not sitting there worrying about what other people think about you, or what you're going to say, what you're not going to say, because your life is independent, and who you are, and what you think of yourself is not dependent upon what they think about you at the Little River Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. So you can be transparent. And you can have true fellowship with other human beings because you can be transparent and talk about things. And the fifth step is not something you do with some other person, although you do it. It's your life. It's the way you talk to people. It's the way you interact to people. And they know that. They know you're without guile. And they know that deal. And so we look back in the book and it says, ultimately, it says, I'm going to just take 2 minutes to finish this thing up on the second step. It really is going to get there. It says... But the real nature of our problem then, and this all stems from, is selfishness and self-centeredness. And we're going to talk about a lot of that this next week when we get really into the third step. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that's the root of the problem. That's the root of your problem, selfishness, self-centeredness. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-centeredness. We step on the toes of others and they retaliate, usually without provocation. But we realize we made decisions based upon self in the past that put us in a position to be hurt. So an alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot. I want what I want, what I want. Everything we do is self-motivated. It's about me, 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 me. What do they think about me as I'm leaving the homestead group? You know, how am I going to act? How's this going to affect me? Me, me. And even when we think we're at our best, and maybe we're doing some things because we're being nice and everything, there's me right behind the scratching the surface. Extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. So don't be nurtured by the fact that you don't think I'm right. If you're an alcoholic, you're not going to think I'm right. Until you're 10 years down the road and you're miserable, you're sucking your thumb, and your wife or your husband has left you, and you're dead broke, and you're drinking again, saying, what's going wrong? And say, maybe that son of a bitch was right.
Yeah.
That's how you learn about right in here. That's how you learn about right and wrong. You don't learn about it through your mind. What do you expect your mind to tell you? Your mind's the disease thing. What are you using that for? You better find somebody else's mind to use. You better put that sucker on the shelf and replace it with a monkey brain or something. I'd do something about that deal. You know, I wouldn't trust your brain if I was you. That's what got you in here. You know? We must get rid of selfishness. We must, or it kills us. Doesn't even hurt us. Kills us. God makes that possible. Doesn't even say higher power. Says God makes that powerful. Often we can't. Says God makes that powerful. You know, I think they're serious about this thing. Say, let no alcoholic say job and no job, wife and no job. He can do anything. He can stay sober. It all depends upon his dependency upon God. Now, after all that, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, after all that, after saying all that and reading the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, we sit there and say, I don't want to hear about this God shit. So what chance do we have? Unless we change our mind. And you know what the big book says about that? It says this sort of thinking has to be abandoned, even against organized religion. We see where they're right. It has to be abandoned. You know something? I don't really care what some old fart says. And I am an old fart. I'm 61. I don't care what some old fart says who's sitting in the back of the room and says, I stayed sober on the first step. Whatever that crap is. Who says, I don't believe in the God. I don't care what he says. I don't care what he says. He's not the big book. He's not my higher power. I care what the big book says. It says this sort of thinking must be abandoned. That means jettisoned. You got to get rid of it. I don't care what you feel about it. I don't give a crap about your feelings. I don't care what you think. Don't tell me what you think. Why should I care what you think? I sat in bars. Why should I care about a guy, what he thinks, who's miserable, who's going to drink again, who's not going to work the program? Why don't you just tell me the truth? Tell me the truth, and here's the truth. You hear what I'm saying, you see what's in the book, but you would prefer not to do it. Just tell the truth, just be truthful. I'm not going to work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Use whatever device you want to use. How about this device? It's a different program for everybody. It's a unique program. It's an individual program. You can't tell me what to do. Don't take my inventory. Use any device you want in the world to rationalize. You know, call me a hypocrite. Call me self-righteous. Call me whatever it is. Do whatever you have to do to rationalize in your own mind so that you can ultimately say you don't have to do what they're really saying to do in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You can sort of change it or switch it so you can water it down and not do the real deal. And you know something? You'll probably stay sober for 5 or 10 years. You may stay sober 15 years, but you're not going to get what they got.
Okay. Right.
You're not going to get that rocket ship ride into the fourth dimension of existence of which you hadn't even dreamed. You may be picking up that medallion, be lonely as shit. You know, you and, you know, whatever, the pornography on the internet or whatever it is, get you going, you know. You may not be able to hold down a relationship for 20, 30 years. You may not have any kids, grandkids. Your kids may hate you. Anything may happen. You may not have anybody asking you to sponsor them because nobody wants what you have. And you can tell yourself, well, I picked up a 15-year medallion or a 20-year medallion. You may be in fear all your life, or you may be just talking shit about people behind their back or thinking bad things about people and thinking you're sober, but you're not emotionally sober. You ain't fooling anybody. I'm going to close this. I'm going to read something. This is one of my favorite sort of poems. I like to read this to you. We're going to close this with The Guy in the Glass. I don't know if you've heard this or not. It's one of my favorite ones because I like talking about emotional sobriety, which is the next frontier, including Bill Wilson. And we're going to be talking a lot about that. Bill Wilson said the next frontier was emotional sobriety, which had to do with unhealthy dependencies. And we're going to get into a lot of that stuff during this deal. This is called The Guy in the Glass. It was written in 1934, a year before AA started. When you get what you want and you struggle for PELF, by the way, PELF, P-E-L-F, that's not self. PELF is stuff, things. You know what things are? Just think about what you think about most of the time. It's stuff, right? The TV, the car, you know, the mortgage, the house, the guy, the gal, you know, it's stuff, okay? When you get what you want and you struggle for PELF, and the world makes you king for a day, then go to the mirror and look at yourself and see what that guy has to say. For it isn't your father, a mother, a wife whose judgment upon you must pass. The fellow whose verdict counts most in your life is the guy staring back in the glass. He's the fellow to please, never mind all the rest, for he's with you clear up to the end, and you've passed the most dangerous, difficult test if the guy in the glass is your friend. You may be like Jack Horner and chisel a plum and think you're a wonderful guy, but the man in the glass says you're only a bum if you can't look him straight in the eye. You can fool the whole world down the pathway of years and get pats on the back as you pass, but your final reward will be heartaches and tears if you've cheated the guy in the glass. You don't want to cheat the guy in the glass. This is the only life you got. You don't want to step on it. You know, you want to make this the best deal you have while you're down here. You don't want to get to the end of your life and while you're on deathbed said, I think I screwed the whole thing up. I'd like to have a second chance, thank you. Ain't going to happen. God bless you.